Moreno is a MAGA mistake for black families. If Moreno is elected senator, he'll push to eliminate diversity, equality, and inclusion programs as part of the racist MAGA Republican Project 2025. We've come too far to let extremists like Bernie Moreno take us back. MAGA Moreno is a mega mistake for Ohio. Register to vote by October 7th at OhioVoterGuide.org and re-elect Senator Sherrod Brown. Paid for by Win Senate, which is responsible for the content of this ad. WinSenate.org, not authorized by any candidate or candidates committee.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Good morning and welcome to episode 99 of the Jaguar Report podcast. My name is Gus Logue, joined as always by my co-host, John Shipley. I feel like every other time I do the intro, it's the official Jaguar Report episode, Jaguar Report show, and then sometimes I omit official. So this is officially and unofficially the Jaguar Report podcast. John, it's we're pretty much entering the dog days of the offseason. How you doing?
Rough. Yeah. No, I'm doing good, Gus. Question before we start. In a negotiation, would you rather be highballed or logballed?
And I was getting highballed or lowballed?
Logballed.
Logballed.
Yeah.
I guess I gotta go with logballed.
Yeah. I like it, man. The Marshawn Lattimore thing. You started it, man. You were the first person to say it. I'm not saying it'll happen or anything, but
yeah, that's the important part, is that it probably won't happen. But I'm taking recognition all the way up until the point when it doesn't happen. So
how does it feel to have your finger on the pulse and, you know, making the puppet stance?
Pretty good. I actually didn't think that Spider-Man was going to blow up today. I thought I was going to get like 20 likes or be like, get some attention. But then like everyone got super excited about it. So I almost feel bad, maybe misleading some fans, because like that whole Barnwell article is like maybe one of those eight players I think that he listed will end up getting traded. And so like really any offseason trade article or just any trade idea article that you see is like, even if it makes sense, like me writing about and talking about Lattimore months ago, like whether or not it'll happen is a whole nother thing, as we saw with Brandon Ayuk and T. Higgins.
I've probably written like 50 should the Jaguars trade for player X articles in my life. I'm not sure if any of them's ever happened. Like trades are just, they're nearly impossible. Like player and team fit wise and even conversation wise, they're hard to like ever really like project. Like you can, like you said, talk about why it makes sense, but when trades happen, they're normally, you know, out of the blue, out of nowhere. So it's a good bit, but these are definitely the dog days. Like you said, that post draft period, that May, June is the worst content-wise. You know, I will wake up, open my computer, and just stare at a blank screen for probably the first 5 or so minutes I'm awake this time of the year. It's a dog. Like, the most exciting thing to happen since the draft, which the draft's always exciting, but it was also, like, what, like 3 weeks ago? The most exciting thing that happened was a mini camp practice where they were more or less, like, learning how to line up. it's the days of, you know, this time in the NFL season. But we are all prisoners to the NFL schedule release, and it will provide salvation tomorrow, guys. I was talking about this with Charles McDonald earlier on his show, and he was like, I used to be as a fan, didn't care at all about the schedule release, but now that I have to do this, like, for a living, it's like they literally have you, like, in the palm of their hands. Like, it's the only saving grace in terms of content.
Now we have to. Yeah, my schedule has been set for to have no plans for tomorrow night at 8 p.m. It's just going to be, at least it'll be fresh content, I guess, which is nice. But it is, I think that all the schedule release videos make it a little bit more fun and exciting, because if it was just like they announced the full schedule on a piece of paper, then it would still be exciting and a little bit exciting to just see who the team is playing and when. But like all the creative schedule release videos are pretty fun. And it seems like the Jags have something interesting up their sleeve with like some kind of X-Men 97 crossover thing. So that should be cool. But Yeah, like it's just the schedule. Like it's like you said, it's just the NFL calendar.
We know the opponents.
Points fall in. Yeah. But to go to mini camp, kind of like you said, I feel like my biggest takeaway from Doug Peterson's press conference before was him saying, oh, like right now, like all we're seeing is how much these guys can retain information and learn information. So I was like, okay, great. I'm glad I'm out here. Because I mean, it does make sense because like we already knew what kind of athleticism they had based on all of the prep that the team did before the draft.
Yeah.
Everything that we can kind of research after the draft about these players. And so now, like, it shouldn't be really a surprise that mini camp is just more about the mental side of the game and not about learning. But that makes it a little bit less interesting for us to watch, especially with them also just being in shirts and shorts. But what were your takeaways from either Doug's presser or just mini camp?
Yeah. So my big like thought on rookie mini camps are it's like you've seen training camp practices. Rookie mini camp is like a practice version of that. Yeah, it's like for context, there were two offensive linemen out there. So like they're just doing individual drills. There were two defensive linemen out there, Mason Smith and Jordan Jefferson. I'm not kidding when I say they spent the majority of the practice learning like stances and stuff. You know, they're just learning the very basic thing. So like you shouldn't take away too much. Like I had a fan tweet at me like saying like anything on Mason Smith, I'm worried. I haven't heard anything about him. And I'm like, there's nothing to hear.
It's too early for that, man. Maybe if it's like the third week of training camp and you haven't heard anything, then we can
talk about it. Like take a step back and breathe. But I will say, I think the big things I look for at these kind of practices are one, it's more notable when you struggle than if you do good. Like I've seen some like draft picks be DOA first day of minicamp, dead on arrival. Like there was one last year, not to get into it, but it was just like obvious. Like after the first day of minicamp, it's like, all right, maybe this one won't be the day three gym. I think it's more notable when that happens as opposed to a guy like having like a fantastic day or whatever. I didn't see any of that really out of any like draft picks or anything. So it wasn't anything that super notable. And then the other thing I look for is just basically athleticism, movement skills. I think they should look like the type of selection like they were. Like Brian Thomas was a first-round receiver out there with a bunch of undrafted free agents. I think he should just look different when he goes through his reps and stuff. And at least in my opinion, he did. You know, he was like the second biggest receiver out there after Seth Williams, and he was clearly the best athlete out of all of them. I don't think he dropped a pass. So I thought he, at least physically, athletic-wise, looked the part. But then again, it's a bias because we already know Brian Thomas is a freak athlete. I could have told you that without watching him, you know, practice because there's this thing called the combine where these things are measured. Same goes with Mason Smith. I knew going into it, Mason Smith was like a created player on Madden physically. And yeah, it looks like it, but you probably shouldn't get double points for that. But I will say it's important to note if guys look, I think, how they're supposed to. Like a first round pick shouldn't like be looking like an undrafted free agent. Maybe that's a bit unfair, but that's just like my main takeaway. But also my biggest takeaway ever from a rookie minicamp to show you how unimportant it is was that, holy crap, Trayvon Walker's a big dude. That was seeing Trayvon for the first time and him and his like massive like arms, it was like staggering, but that's literally was the highlight of that. Yeah, I can't tell you anything he did. It was just seeing him for the first time, like, holy crap, this dude is as big as they say he is.
That's kind of how I felt seeing Mason Smith. I didn't pay a ton of attention to him on the field like during the practice. But then I was helping out Hayes with a one-on-one interview after. And I thought to myself, he kind of looks like Lego Bowser, because not just normal Bowser, because Bowser is just like a huge beast. But I don't know. He's kind of has like a blocky build, but it's an impressive build, and it very impressive is the main takeaway. And then I was mostly watching receivers just because Brian Thomas was the first round pick. And then they had an interesting UDFA and Josh Cephas. Is Josh your guy? Are you putting your claim on him?
Might as well. Okay, one, I think, like, if you see any interviews of him and stuff throughout training camp, he's really, in my opinion, like, engaging, cool, infectious personality. And two, I thought he had as good as any receiver not named Brian Thomas Jr. Like, I thought Brian Thomas Jr. stood out compared to the rest of the pack, which you'd expect. He's the first-round pick. I thought Cephas looked like the second best guy out there, just in terms of the hands, the body control. It was on air, but just the fine-tuned technique of his routes. I think a big reason he was undrafted is because he didn't run a good 40. But I think once you get these guys on the field, 40 times rarely matter, you know, right? Especially, you know, this position. And he didn't look slow to me in any way. So I thought he was definitely, like, out of the undrafted guys, I thought he was definitely a standout. And they honestly have, in my opinion, this is one of their most, like, interesting undrafted, you know, kind of groups in a while. I'm interested in him. I'm interested in David White is supposed to be, like, an all-world, like, type special teams player. So maybe he could be, like, a new Tim Jones and carve out a role that way. Andrew Parker at linebacker. Like, I think they could still fit, like, a six linebacker, especially with the new kickoff rules. It feels like every time they talk about kickoff rules, Balky mentions linebackers. It just feels like they could maybe potentially carry six instead of just five. And then Josh Proctor at defensive back. I think Dane Brugler had him as, like, fourth or fifth round pick. He was, like, on the consensus board is like a day three, like, should have been drafted. Like,
yeah, early day three. For sure.
Yeah, so I'm interested to see him as, like, when pads come on and stuff, see if he can maybe carve out some kind of role. This definitely feels like a team where it's a chance for some undrafted guys to kind of make it, because, like, the top of the roster is set, but I'd say the bottom of it is still kind of up in the air in a couple of different positions.
Yeah, I would add two names to that too. Steven Jones, an offensive lineman. I forget where he went to college, and he didn't necessarily have the most impressive day on the field, but just in terms of what I've heard about him has been good things. And so I think he could be competing for, like, whatever, like, the backup swing tackle spot perhaps, and, like, maybe be, like, the ninth lineman. What are you making that face at me for?
There was randomly, like, six Steven Jones questions at the press conference.
Yeah, that's true. Maybe it got in my head then, and I was like, oh, he's someone to look out for. But the main thing I wanted to mention was Lorenzo Lingard, the running back, who was at Florida for 3 years, and then he transferred to Akron and put up a pretty good season. And so, I mean, as a Florida fan, I'm definitely haven't been very convinced by the Gators coaching staff in a few years. So I don't know if he was injured at any point or if he was just kind of, like, stuck low on the depth chart, but then he ended up making a splash as a senior, and I thought he looked really impressive on the field. I thought he looked even more explosive than their fifth round pick, Keelan Robinson. But of course, like, at this time last year, Tank Bigsby was getting a decent amount of hype for how he looked in shirts and shorts. So I am looking forward to watching Lingard more throughout the summer, but it's not like my expectations are that high.
I'd still say Tank looked good.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I also said Tank looks good, but
I'm going just down as a humor. Yeah, I'm going.
That doesn't necessarily equate to anything.
You're a Florida fan? You never talk about it.
There's not much to talk about.
No, that's not, my friend. I'm definitely, definitely afraid of that UCF-UF game. The thing is, I just poke fun. I don't believe, like, any of the things I say. I don't have any pride for UCF football. Like, I love the school, but I don't care. I don't have any, like, leg to stand on. But I know none of that will matter if UCF loses that game. So,
and, like, Florida fans shouldn't or won't take a victory lap for beating the Knights. But it's more so just, like, let's, like, shut up the little brother and, like, step him in the corner for a couple years and hopefully won't hear a peep from him in a while.
I spent the entire day at the draft waiting for that UCF tackle.
Yeah.
It was the longest draft slide of my life. Nonetheless.
At least he can produce a bit out of it. Maybe that's why I don't talk about the Gators, is that I feel like there's probably plenty of bits to produce, but none of them are good ones. None of them are ones I want to say.
That's fair. I was with you. I thought Lingard looked impressive. I don't know if he's coming off an injury. He was wearing a orange penny jersey though, which normally indicates a player who it's already no contact, but I guess extra no contact.
I don't know what that means.
Yeah,
contact at any point in the practice.
But it's at least notable, I guess, he had one on. In terms of Keelan Robinson, I think the most interesting thing was just watching them do, like, the new kickoffs, like, in person, right?
Yeah, that was interesting. I'm glad you mentioned that. It was just cool to see it in person, kind of. Because, like, obviously we've both seen videos of the XFL doing it and kind of understand the rules by now, but then to actually see it was nice.
You can tell how early in the stages it is, too, though. What? You can tell how early in the stages it is.
That's true.
There's a lot of moving pieces, but it was like the most like diverse group of positions I've seen on like a special teams, you know, though. Like there were linebackers, there were defensive backs, there were receivers, there were tight ends, there were a couple of defensive linemen. I saw 97 get out there. it was like a 285-pound defensive end, but even he was playing the special teams because just, you know, the new rules. Cam Little, I personally didn't see him kick a single field goal. Did you? I don't.
Oh, actually, I took this hilarious video of him that was like, I zoomed in pretty close to when he was kicking. And then as he was kicking, I tried to kind of zoom out and make it a pretty good shot. But then as I zoomed out, I like completely lost track of the ball. So it was like the worst video you'll ever seen. I meant to post it, honestly, but so that was the only one I caught. And then since I lost the ball in the camera, I didn't even know if it went in or not. And that was the only kick that I watched.
You're the only person that saw a kick and you lost it trying to shoot the Zapruder film.
I was like, I don't really care that much about posting videos, but like people seem excited about Cam Little and I had like a good shot of him. So I was like, if I can make this work.
Post all the videos, man. It's like I said, it's the dog days of content. Anything, and I truly mean anything, gets eaten up this time of year. I saw a Bears beat reporter, like an older guy, try to take a video of Torrey Taylor, the fourth round punter, kicking a punt. And the caption was like, I think he's going to be deserving of a fourth round pick. And it shows him videotaping. He kicks the ball and then he looks up at the clouds and the ball never comes back within. But it's like 10 seconds of him just filming the clouds. Every comment's like, nice video, man.
That's pretty good. See, I should have like tried to turn it into a bit without it like me trying to take a video and then it turning into a bit because it was just bad. But yeah, it was funny seeing him in person because he's like obviously he looks young, but he looks even younger when you see him in person compared to even a picture.
He does. It will be. You remember the old? This might age me to an extent. The old Chargers kicker Nate Keating.
The name rings a bell.
He was super. Like, he was like that, man. And, like, he did not look like he was in place at all. On an NFL field. Yeah, around other players. And, I didn't see him kick. I will be looking more closely for that. They were mostly working on kickoffs anyways. And, again, for context, there were 2 days of rookie minicamp. Media only sees one of them. So, you can say a guy had a terrible day one day, and then on the next day, he could have been the best practice player in the world and nobody will know it because we're only there for one day. So I'd say take everything like, you know, probably at half face value because we don't know how these guys looked over the course of the entire weekend, which I guess would bring me to probably the biggest storyline during rookie minicamp, I'd say. Yeah.
I was going to ask if you had a certain player in mind for that description of, oh, he might be better on Saturday.
I meant it for everyone, but I mean, it fits him. Like, so Jarvis Landry obviously is there for a tryout. Were you in his scrum after the practice where he talked about
it? No, I walked over and, like, heard the last answer, and that was it. So, no.
Super, super interesting guy, engaging guy. He seemed like he's very aware this is, like, a last shot kind of thing. And he's even, like, saying, like, he got asked why he's doing it. And he's like, to see if I still can do it. So, it's clear that, like, he's still looking, like, to see if he can make that kind of impact now. To date, he hasn't been signed yet, unless he's been signed while we're talking, and I've missed it. That seems to happen every other episode, so not completely discounting it. They don't have an OTA for media until Monday, 6 days from now, May 20th. So if he's not signed by then, I'd imagine that's book closed, at least, you know, unless any injuries happen. But we'll see. I didn't think he had a great day. He slipped a few times, like just with his footing, dropped a few passes. Like, he looked like a guy who was in his first NFL practice and like
he was trying out.
Yeah. But what I will say is I think it was also clear, like, literally all the receivers were following him around like puppies. He followed around like they're a good dog, and it's clear they were all soaking in everything from him. Even if he was doing like his post like practice scrum, he had like rookies coming up and like saying hey to him, like Jerry and Jones and stuff like that. It's not anywhere near as bad as having Tim Tebow in a 90-man roster. It's still probably a bit of a caricature, but is it too cliche to say maybe he has value on a 90-man roster just as a veteran for these young guys to be around? It's not saying he'll be on the 53-man roster, but
yeah. No,
is it that bad if he's on the 90-man roster? I still contend Tebow being on a 90-man roster was that bad. But is it that bad if Jarvis Landry's on the 90-man roster for that?
No, especially if, like Peterson said at his presser before minicamp that, like, oh, like, Jarvis will be, like, a good influence. He'll kind of, like, take these guys under his wing, yada, yada. But then to actually see it, like you said, I feel like it's a good sign, and maybe they'll want to add him to the 90-man just for that reason. Because I feel my stance has always been I wouldn't be surprised if he signed after minicamp. But I would be shocked if he made the 53-man roster. And so, like, I don't really see what the harm is in having him around for the next two, maybe 3 months.
Yeah, I mean, giving him at least training camp to maybe push for, like, that fifth or sixth spot. Maybe they carried seven last year, if I recall. So maybe even that seventh spot. The thing is, like, if he's, like, looking for an actual role, like, the Jags is probably on a great place to try out with in general because they already have their first four receiver spots, you know, locked up. So, but I don't know. I remember walking into practice that day not caring really at all about the tryout. And then I left it thinking, this is actually a guy I think they should sign. So, I don't know. Maybe I'm just easily swayed like that. I like that you saw the same thing I did, though. It makes me feel not so crazy.
I was going to say the other thing that I saw, which is my personal favorite moment of training or mini camp, was him dunking on the goalpost like Jimmy Graham after a long touchdown. And the best part is that he actually, I don't know if he tried to, he kind of tried to earlier and then like maybe realized he had to jump higher than he did. So then he went back a second time and pulled it off. So I was like, all right, there you go, Jarvis. Two times a charm.
You should make the picture of you guys your pick.
Maybe. I have a pretty good picture from Deem actually at last year's training camp that I should have made profile picture a long time ago. But I also I don't know, I saw some advice that if you like change your profile picture too much, then like people won't recognize your account, which I haven't changed my profile picture once in the past 5 years. So
who'd you get that from? Zuckerberg?
No, it's probably some fancy football site.
Yeah. Yeah.
Probably. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I'll change it.
I think you should.
Okay. Well, unless someone can get a better picture on Monday.
Yeah. But with that said, anything else that I guess a few other things at rookie minicamp. DeAndre Prince posted a picture of a sick grab on his Instagram. Yeah, I posted it. Like, again, context is needed. There's no other player on the field, but that was a sick catch, dude. I had to watch it like 10 times to even see that he caught it.
Yeah.
I thought the tryout quarterback, Brendan Armstrong, was at least better than EJ Perry and better than the Miami guy.
Yeah, I like didn't really notice him, but that's a good thing. Like, I didn't notice any like errant passes or like guys having to reach way behind them. So, yeah, I think it's a good take.
I've been at mini camp practices where passes were almost landing on media members' heads.
Not
exaggerating. I won't name names, but there was one mini camp quarterback who almost took out Mike DeRocca. Errant pass.
Well, yeah, I don't. Off the top of my head, I don't remember like a single errant pass from Friday. So yeah,
they draft a quarterback next year, right?
Yes,
I think so too.
Because I think Beathard and Jones are both on the last years of the deal. I feel like. It's pretty obvious that they want to either get like day three pick via trade for Mac Jones if like some team's quarterback gets hurt during like a preseason game, or like maybe he'll be on the Jags for this full year and then sign a decent enough backup quarterback contract in 2025 that the Jags could get some kind of like comp pick in the formula. So yeah, I think it makes a lot of sense for there to be a new quarterback too in 2025.
It definitely seems like a 1 year kind of thing for both sides. So like if you're Mac Jones, do you want to be in Jacksonville Pass this year? I mean, Trevor Lawrence is about to sign a contract. Like Mac Jones, I'm pretty sure wants to play again. Like he can just use this year as a year where he goes a calendar year without playing a bad football game. Like
yeah, it's like a gap year for him.
Yeah, exactly. So now I'm with you on that one. All right. Well, is there anything else from rookie minicamp that really stood out to you? There's a reason we only see one of these, by the way. I'm perfectly okay with it. To me, like I said, there are some position groups that only have like two players in them. So like there's no competition. I think Doug Peterson honestly put it the best way I've seen it described. He was like, there's literally not these exact words, but he said there's basically no competition at all. So you can only compete with yourself, which is more or less how rookie minicamp is. You know, you can basically just see how well you can do, and there's nothing else. There's no one-on-ones. There's no offense versus defense. It's a fugazi.
Fugazi. Yeah. Doesn't exist. Yeah, the only other thing I had written down was that I saw Chad Hall in a boot on his left foot, and so that tells you everything you need to know about minicamp, is that was one of five things I wrote down. I was like, oh, well, I wonder what happened to him.
He has the most important coaching job of a position coach this year, right?
Yeah, that's an accurate take.
Like getting Brian Thomas up to speed, and two, having Gabe and Kirk and et cetera just have a cleaner year than the receiving room had last year. Like last year, the most important position coach is probably Rauscher, just because he had to get a rookie right tackle up to speed. The year before, it was Shuey. So I guess this just signals whoever's coaching the first round pick, but he definitely has like the biggest job of like any position.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I think even if the Jags have gotten a receiver in the second or the third round instead of Brian Thomas in the first, like, it's still really important to not just develop your big rookie, but then also like the Josh Cephas's and Parker Washington's and Elijah Cooks of the world, because the Jags still like don't really, they have, I feel like, about the same depth as they did last year, where they have like three clear starters and then a return specialist as their number four receiver, and then like whoever beneath them. And so it's kind of like a similar story in terms of just depth, where they've got three starters. They've got Devin Duvernay replacing Jamal Agnew in that like wide receiver four role. And then, so I think it's going to be big for him to not just help Gabe Davis transition from Buffalo and then Brian Thomas transition to LSU, but then also trying to get as much out of you can out of Cephas and Washington and Cooks and whoever else, so that if there's just one injury, then you'll have at least one guy that's ready to go.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good point. That was probably my other biggest takeaway. Like, just watching him, I was like, yeah, this is probably, there's a lot of pressure on this guy.
Yeah.
You know, this year for his group. All right. You got anything else from rookie minicamp?
No, let's hit some questions.
All right. Well, we're going to take a break first, and we'll be right back with some questions. All right, Gus. We're back. We love fan questions, don't we? I've said it once. I've said it once. I'll say it a million times. I'll answer any question that doesn't like make me potentially look bad. Like, if you ask me to incriminate myself, I'm ignoring it. Everything else, come on. You can ask me anything you want, any category. So,
for sure.
Let's go ahead and get into it. Yes.
All right. Well, I'm going to start off with one of mine before I forget, just because I know you and Chuck took some listener questions on your show.
Didn't take yours.
That's what I thought. I thought the same show. But I wanted to ask you anyway. My question for y'all was, if you could add any Hall of Fame player to the Jaguars for just the 2024 season to help them try to win a Super Bowl, who would you add?
It's got to be Revis, right?
Ooh. Okay. Maybe we can debate for 30 seconds on this, because I was thinking Lawrence Taylor as mine, where I don't know if like adding a superstar defensive back to the secondary would make as big of a swing as like taking the Jags from one of the better defensive lines in the league to just the best defensive line in the league. So I don't know. It's kind of a weird, like the whole pass rush versus coverage. Not necessarily.
Yeah.
It's just like a yin and yang and a give and take. And so it depends on whether you want to even out the defense with a really good corner like Revis, or if you want to just go like all in on one position and kind of make it more stars and scrubs.
I do feel like the question is kind of just which position should the Jaguars upgrade more? Because I feel like you can name any Hall of Famer. Is it a bad other than like a running back maybe? But no, Lawrence Taylor would be sick. I would contend that Revis can play more so with Trayvon and Josh Allen at the same time than potentially a third pass rusher being thrown in there in the rotation. Trayvon will play inside. I'll believe it when I see it. Don't pull that trump card on me.
That's fair. The only other one I thought of was Jerry Rice, or maybe like Megatron. What would be like the coolest Hall of Fame receiver to pair with Lawrence?
Randy Moss.
Yeah, no, that's the correct answer. All right, moving on. Bill McNeil asks, based on the yards per route run statistic that everyone loves, Brian Thomas Jr. was basically an undraftable wide receiver. Am I just completely misunderstanding the statistic slash importance of the statistic? So it's a little bit hard to answer this without knowing what Brian Thomas's yards per route run metrics were off the top of either of our heads. But I will say, I think what Bill is trying to say is that his career yards per route run is not very promising. And usually career yards per route run for college prospects is kind of a good analytical tool to use to value wide receivers coming out in the draft. And so I assume that Brian Thomas had a pretty darn good yards per route run during his final season last year, but he did have a pretty underwhelming yards per route run in his career. And I will say that, like, yes, that's definitely not a good sign. And you can kind of just say that, but just to add context, I think the fact that he improved every year is definitely a good thing. It's not like he like had his best season as a freshman and then was hurt for his next 2 years. Like even like LaVisca Chenault might fit that description. Plus he was playing with like NFL caliber players at his position. So it's not like he like wasn't able to beat out some scrub his freshman year. Like he was playing with Malik Nabers and whoever else. I feel like there was Jamar Chase. And then yeah, the last note is that since his career was only three seasons, that's a good thing that he like declared early and came out in his third season, because it would be a much rougher look if he had low yards per route run and he had like a 5 year career instead of just a 3 year career. And so to answer the question, like I think that it is fair to be a little concerned about Thomas Jr.'s career yards per route run. But if you look at it with additional context, it's still a little bit of a concern, but not as much of a concern for sure.
Here's my thing. I think everything that you said is completely like valid. Like, I don't think any of that is like, honestly, like wrong. Like, I think every stat deserves some level of context. I'm not sure who I can credit with this, but there was a long, you know, thread where basically it was like 2.0 yards per route over your college career is normally like the benchmark. Like, there are very few guys who don't at least meet that. And I believe Brian Thomas had like 3.21 his last year, and then below 1.5 his first 2 years. And there are just a few points I'd like to make. One is that 2 yards per route run isn't even like a high benchmark. Like, it's not a crazy one. Somebody tweeted out like a draft graph, or not a draft graph, a data graph of like receivers who have hit. Yeah, screw you. Receivers who have hit like their college yards per route run. And you can tell on the two sides, like, wow, some of the best receivers in the NFL are on one side of the graph, some of the biggest busts on one side. And yeah, there are a few busts on the top side, but does one NFL bust who had a really good yards per route run negate the value of all these other guys who, you know, have it? And the data just shows that it is a very, very translatable stat. So there have been outliers. So I don't think it's fair to ever say somebody won't be an outlier, but I do think there's a reason a guy who's 6'2 and ran a 4.34 wasn't like a top 10 pick, you know, like it's not like the most clean, surefire pick in the world. Like, it definitely needs development, you know, really was a 1 year, you know, production kind of guy. And then my second point would be, as for the context, like a lot of guys, like I've seen it brought up a lot with him, like his thing won't be high. He played with Malik Nabers, etc. There have been a lot of receivers who played with other good receivers who had exceptional, you know, yards per out run. Justin Jefferson played with Jamar Chase and he had a fantastic one. Devonta Smith and Waddle both had good ones. I mean, there's just, like I said, it's not that high of a benchmark. So I wouldn't say he's undraftable because of it, but I do think it's part of his profile that I think you have to look at. And I think my big thing where I'm different with fans when it comes to Brian Thomas Jr. is his potential impact for, like, say, 2024. Like, I think if fans are expecting him to replace Calvin Ridley's production right away, I don't think that's going to happen, because I think that's part of his profile, is he's a guy whose game is still growing and he's very early in his development. I think he can be a very useful player in a very specific role as a rookie, but that's more so where I'm at with it, if that makes sense.
I think a month into the season, Jags fans are going to look around and say, why the heck did we not draft Xavier Worthy? Because I agree with you where I don't think Brian Thomas is going to produce right away. And I think he's going to have to get acclimated, not just to his role in the Jags offense, but just to life in the NFL in general. But I feel like Xavier Worthy is, I mean, he was the next receiver taken off the board, and he went to the Chiefs, who have, even though it's not much of a rivalry, there's plenty of kind of history, I guess, between Andy Reid and Doug Peterson. And then obviously they just both have two really good quarterbacks in the AFC. And so I think Xavier Worthy is in a really good spot to succeed right away. And so I think even if Thomas is going to end up having the better season or even the better career, like, I think out of the gates, Jags fans might be a little bit underwhelmed and say, well, why didn't we get this guy?
Yeah, no, I could definitely see that. Like I said, Thomas's overall projection, I think, has a really high ceiling, and you can like reap a ton of rewards from it, but I don't think it'll be as smooth as maybe some other guys, which is, again, a reason why I think he was available at number 23.
All right, next question from Cristiano. More likely free agent addition, cornerback or pass rusher?
That's tough.
I would have said pass rusher a week ago, probably, just because of the depth on the team. Like, they both make sense, but I think the depth at edge is a little bit worse. But I think I'm going to change it to cornerback, only because they brought in a former Detroit Lions cornerback for a visit. I think it was last week. I forget his name off the top of my head, but just like the fact that they've shown publicly that they're doing homework on bringing in a cornerback, I'll go with that position.
Jerry Jacobs.
Thank you.
Yeah. That's what I'm here for, baby. The fastest Google in the West.
That's what you're here for.
Yeah. I don't know. I think in both cases, they're going to wait until after minicamp. I don't think they sign anybody until that period between minicamp and training camp, because I think they'll use minicamp as a chance to evaluate what they have and really ask themselves, okay, what do we really need before the season starts?
Right.
I don't know. I could see edge, just because I think chances are, I mean, it's minicamp. It's hard to look bad in minicamp. I think chances are they'll like what they see from the young guys and a little more than what they like at the edge position.
Okay. That makes sense. Next question's from Jack. Is there an edge rusher left on the market who you think the Jags could slash should bring in? Bud Dupree just got off the market a couple of days ago. He signed with the Chargers. And so now it's down to Calais Campbell, Yannick Ngakoue, Carl Lawson still available, Emmanuel Ogba from the Dolphins. I would say those last two, Ogba and Lawson, would probably be my top two targets.
You know who it's got to be, Mo. I say Ngakoue, man. It made sense last year. There's mutual interest last year. Maybe Ngakoue got a little bit humbled in terms of what his role should be after a year, you know, in Chicago. Because it seemed like the big hangup last year was he didn't want to sign up to be like a third edge. You know, like he wanted to be like a full-time guy as opposed to a pass rush specialist. But Father Time comes for us all.
No, that would definitely be – like the best on paper fit, I think, just because the Jags obviously need a third guy and not a first or a second guy.
Yeah.
And they, like, in terms of like body type too, like it would be nice to have a speed rusher since they've got so many other big bodies on the team.
100%.
From Carl, is it unreasonable to expect Brian Thomas to go for 1,000 yards? And then will scheme change disrupt Trayvon's upward trajectory or enhance it? Why? I feel like we kind of sort of said Brian Thomas is probably going to go under 1,000 yards as a rookie. Fair?
I think like 800, 850 sounds fair. Like, I'm not going to say you're a fool if you predict 1,000, but I'm not going to bet on it.
Yeah, I think I was going to say 750 or 800 is probably where I would land as a projection. But in terms of Trayvon, I certainly don't think the scheme change is going to disrupt his upward trajectory. I suppose it'll enhance it just because Nielsen is such a lauded defensive line coach, and just his philosophy as well in terms of kind of attacking and getting off the ball. It feels like it's a good fit. I feel like we kind of went over that when Nielsen was first hired, is that Trayvon Walker is one of the big winners of that hire.
The more Trayvon plays it with his hand out, I think the better for him. And he fits the mold of a lot of edge guys Nielsen has had before. Like, yeah. Honestly, Trayvon Walker, Cam Jordan isn't a bad comparison, I think, really, you know, by any means in terms of how they should be utilized and skill set, stuff like that.
For sure. Lou asked, if you had to build an NFL coaching staff made up entirely of Tony Soprano's crew, who are you hiring for what?
That is a loaded question. Tony's got to be head coach.
Yeah. Or is he the owner? Oh, no, we're doing coaching staff. So, yeah, Tony's the coach.
I'll go Silvio Dante, offense coordinator, the strategist, and Bobby Baklia, the offensive line coach.
Right. I feel like
– Richie Aprile, defensive line coach. And I'll go Pauly, defensive coordinator.
I was most interested. I call Pauly's probably my favorite, so I was interested in where you were going to go for him.
Patsy, special teams coordinator.
I'm going to say, how about Chris is offensive coordinator? Because then he can be like the press tailor to Tony Soprano's Doug Peterson. All right, I think we nailed that. Or you?
I like that. I like that.
Big Noel Fan 77 asked, Trev will get extended soon. In light of recent extensions, Jared Goff just got signed 24 hours ago. What do you think the terms would look like? I'm hoping mega package, 10 years, 580 to 600 million. Yeah. I think he's going to get 6 years, 60 per year.
6 or 7 years, I think, sounds right. It's got to be
still like kind of sort of a mega deal.
No, it is. I think it's minimum average per year, Burrow money. I'm sick of being asked if I think he deserves it. I don't care if he deserves it. It's what's going to happen. Take your medicine and like it. Sorry, guys. I got annoyed. I keep telling myself, I'll stop getting into these silly little tiffs. I know. I'm sick. I'm sick in the head. Go on.
All right, we got two more. Jags, 1234 asked, how well do you feel they've addressed offensive line, and do you see room for more competition at offensive line?
I don't know why that delivery killed me. I mean, the only thing they did to address it was, what, sign Mitch Morse and make sure Ezra Cleveland, Brandon Sheriff didn't leave town. I mean, I feel like I've stated my opinion on Ezra Cleveland. I think he's probably an average offensive lineman. Mitch Morse, I think, is a good player, but he's also like an aging center who, like, he's not going to be like an all-world impact. You know, like, I think in terms of addressing their offensive line, they're just hoping Luke Fortner was actually that bad, which I don't know. If Luke Fortner was the one thing holding back that offense, and he really is the worst center they've ever drafted. They took him in the third round. Like, doesn't that say something about them too? Like, they're the ones who drafted him. You made the sandwich, buddy.
I feel like a change would have been made a lot sooner if he was a sixth round pick instead of a third round pick. I think the Morse signing is honestly like high risk, high reward isn't the right word. High floor, low ceiling. I don't even know what I'm trying to say. I could see it going both ways because he's like old. And so like hypothetically, he's one of those players that could like fall off a little bit of a cliff just like without really notice at any time. But at the same time, I also think there's potential for him to not just be a big upgrade at one position, but for him to also have kind of a positive impact at the two guard spots next to him. And so if he ends up having kind of a bigger overall effect, then I think it could be pretty good. And then I also commend the Jags for adding another swing tackle in the draft, like adding a experienced SEC guy with a mid-rounder made a lot of sense with Cam Robinson and Walker Little's contracts set to expire next offseason. In terms of seeing more competition, I would have liked to see them add like one more interior lineman. I made the case for them last week, I think, or on our last podcast that they should have drafted Tanner Bortolini instead of Jordan Jefferson with their second, fourth round pick. And you made a good argument against Bortolini, but I still think that, like, if they had added one more guy, even if it was in the seventh round or undrafted free agency, just getting more competition to the interior, since, like you said, like, Morse was the only thing they did other than making sure Ezra and Brandon Sheriff, like, remained in town.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think I wasn't counting the fact that they drafted Javon Foster, but then again, he's a backup. He's not going to be a starter. So I don't know. It really does seem like they're, and they've, Doug Peterson, I feel like, especially said it in his words, like, they're just banking on them being healthier this year than they were a year ago, which I don't know. It's like, it's out of your control how healthy, you know, the team is. So it really is just a coin flip. Like, have you seen that Subway meme? Like, that's how I feel about the Luke Fortner position, where it's like, dudes be like, Subway sucks. My brother, you made the sandwich. That's how I feel about the Luke Fortner
situation. That's good. That's fair. All right. Our last listener question comes from Jones. Is Chris Ballard just Trent Baalke with better PR?
Has Chris Ballard ever won the AFC South? I don't think he has. Trent Baalke has genuinely accomplished more.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. I don't really know how to compare the two, but I think I would rather have Baalke. Ooh, am I sure about that? I don't know.
They're probably in the same class.
They're probably in the same class. But Ballard, like, it must be so infuriating to be a Colts fan, because they just, like, sit on their hands offseason after offseason. And so, like, maybe they're gearing up and, like, waiting until they see a full season of Anthony Richardson to kind of do what the Texans and the Jaguars and the Titans have all done in very recent off seasons, and kind of, like, start swinging for the fences more in free agency and in trades. But, like, until that actually does happen, and until Chris Ballard shows that he's interested in building a true Super Bowl contender and not just a contender to finish second in the AFC South, then yeah, I feel like they're just certainly in the same class.
Yeah, I feel like you definitely have to take a few swings. I think Baalke's taken more swings than he has. Well, at the same time, Baalke's been pretty good about retaining talent, I think, overall. Like, Ridley's the obvious exception, but other than him, Juwan Taylor, I don't think anybody's really blaming them for not signing Juwan Taylor to that contract. I mean, Arden Key, I'd say, is probably their only other, like, big loss. Like, they've re-signed Josh Allen. You know, they've re-signed any other guys that they've needed to these last couple of years for the most part. So yeah. I don't think he's too different from Ballard in that regard.
The only two guys I thought of were Josh Oliver and Quincy Williams. But I feel like they were both released under Dave Caldwell's regime.
No, they're released with Trent and Urban. Trent and Urban, yeah. They traded Josh Oliver shortly after Urban got hired. And I remember sitting in a Zoom, and Urban was asked about it, and his first words were, "Well, I just don't know him." And then he went on to explain
that's so insane. He didn't know half the team by the time he was fired.
He went on to become one of the better blocking tight ends in football. So that was honestly a good pick by Dave Caldwell. Dude just couldn't stay healthy in Jacksonville. I'll never forget. So during the COVID training camp year, we would do pre-practice press conferences with Doug Marrone from Zoom, but it'd be like scheduled for like 20 minutes for practice. And so I live like 30, 35 minutes away from the stadium. I can't do it at home and then go to the practice. So I'd be sitting in my like truck in like the parking lot waiting to go to practice, doing it on my phone. I'll never forget him coming on there. I'm looking at my phone. He just looked like somebody ran over his dog. And he goes, "So Josh Oliver broke a bone in his foot running this weekend." He was so like monotone about it. And that was the last we heard from Josh Oliver. And then, I don't know, Quincy Williams, that was another Dave Caldwell W. I criticized the pick a lot, and a lot of people criticized the pick. Dave ended up being right about it. He's a great linebacker. I do wonder, like, Quincy's a great talent, but I wonder if he would have been able to do what he's done so far if he stayed in Jacksonville, as opposed to going to, like, the perfect place for him in New York.
Yeah, it's
like,
literally
the perfect team, perfect supporting cast.
I think he would have, if he had stayed in Jacksonville, I think he would have been able to carve out a starting role and maybe had like a similar career trajectory as like a Miles Jack. But I mean, he was like an all pro last year, wasn't he? Or at least
he's good, dude. He's really good.
See, I don't know. I don't think that would have ever happened, but we got one last question in at the last minute. So Marcus asked, how different does that run game look this year along the front five? Any chance of less finesse in Doug's zone blocking scheme? Or do they double down on lots of movement, low tolerance timing, bells and whistles? Would love more power gap and short yardage stitch. I think I was kind of expecting, as we transition from 2022 to 2023, that the Jags would have more gap runs in their system. Because as this listener kind of said, Doug, at least when he first got to Jacksonville, and maybe that was also influenced a little bit by Phil Rauscher's time in Minnesota, they were definitely a zone-heavy team. And then as 2022 went on, they kind of experimented more and more with gap-style runs. And that's like kind of a trend we've been seeing across the league, is that like everyone's been obsessed with the wide zone for the past 5+ years. But now, and we really saw it last year, like teams have been able to just like run power and run it really successfully against certain teams that just are not well equipped at all to stop it. And so I was expecting more power last year, but then I think like they kind of tried to make a power game out of Tank Bigsby and Brenton Strange, and obviously that didn't work. And then I think also an impact of the run game was Trevor Lawrence's injury, because I think they were probably forced to go into more shotgun stuff. And when you're in the shotgun, you have kind of less of a menu of options to pick from in the run game. And so I think this year, even though actually I think Morse could make a pretty big impact because he's just going to be a lot better as a run blocker than Luke Fortner was. But then I think even just like a little bit of progression from Brenton Strange and Tank Bigsby could help. And then just a healthier season from Trevor Lawrence, all those things could factor into a more successful power game in 2024.
Yeah, I think so too. I think it's you who's posted some good data about this before. Like the Jaguars have had one of the more like multiple, you know, running games in the league. Like it seems like they throw a little bit of everything, you know, out there. They might major like in zone, like you said, but they at least dabble in a little bit of everything. Part of it feels like it's because they were bad everything last year. They were trying to like figure out what they could actually run.
Yeah.
Like you said, big steps forward by Tank and Strange would be big. I just keep coming back to, I don't think it's only Luke Fortner's fault at the offensive line that the running game struggled last year, because like the whole left side of the offensive line struggled in the running game. The tight end struggled in the running game. In my opinion, the receivers struggled in the running game. Like that was a big impact of Zay being injured. He was their best blocker. So I don't know what the reason for that is. I don't have the answers there. I just felt like it was like a system-wide. I think Trent Baalke called it a systematic issue, and I agree with him. I agree with him.
No, that's fair. All right. That's all of our listener questions we got. That was fun.
So schedule comes out tomorrow night. Gus and I will be back on Thursday to talk about it. You got any quick hitting takes on it? My take will be, I predict they only get one primetime game. Not sure against it makes sense. I think maybe Miami. And that I think that they honestly would be better playing some of their bigger games like early on in the season. Like if they had like 3 division games in the first 4 weeks of the season, I think that's perfect for them.
Yeah, I think that's probably a good idea. I agree that it's probably going to be one primetime game, but I think it's either going to be a classic gross Thursday night game against the Titans, or I think it's going to be Thanksgiving. Oh, fair. I would hate it so much, Sean. Thanksgiving is my favorite holiday, which is mostly nostalgic from like growing up and playing a bunch of like turkey bowls and stuff. But it remains my favorite holiday, and I would just absolutely hate having to work it. So I guess it's going to be a Thursday game. It's either going to be against the Lions on Thanksgiving or the Titans on Thursday night football sometime.
I love Thanksgiving. I'm a big family guy, and I'm a big guy. I love Thanksgiving, dude. If I have to work during Thanksgiving, I'll be pissed. I know some Jaguars fans would love it. You'd be on primetime thing. And I'll be honest, I want the best for Jaguars fans. Jaguars fans have supported me, my family, they pay the bills. I love you guys. I will hold the line against this. I hope you go to hell if you want.
Yeah, that's fair. I feel like maybe if it was like the 8 p.m. slot or like the latest slot, still be terrible, but
I'm going to be punching the air.
If you wouldn't have to plan Thanksgiving dinner around our work schedule, that would be a bummer.
Maybe we can share Gene's turkey in the media room. Go on. Low blow. Go on.
All right, that's all I got. We'll move back in what 2 days to go over what that schedule actually does look like.
If we will. Well, that's all I got, guys. You got anything else, my friend?
No, that's all I got. All
right. Well, we'll be back on Thursday to go over the Jaguar schedule. Get it? Yeah. Yuck it up. Thank you guys for listening to the 99th episode of the Jaguar Report podcast. Hey, Thursday will be episode 100. We're not going to do anything special. Not going to offer anything, but it will be a big day. So continue to subscribe to us on YouTube. Continue to review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube. Say anything you want. We got some commenters throwing some haymakers at Gus in the last video. Keep bringing it. Keep bringing it. What was it? The guy was like, he said something about your DJ Chark Brian Thomas Jr. comparison, which to me, you made it like 30 minutes into the episode. It's a good sign. He was listening. So I say keep bringing him on. But thank you guys for listening. Again, make sure to subscribe to us at Jaguar Report on YouTube. My name is John Shipley. My friend, co-host, Gus Logue. We'll be back Thursday. Don't forget, you just got Logue bald.
That's right.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.